All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. It's a week 14 edition of the show. I'm Bobby Fenton, and it is a pleasure to be talking about a 500 football team. Yet again, I keep finding myself saying that, and yet it really is a pleasure because it could have been a lot worse. And in fact, it, with only minutes to go, really looked like it was going to be a lot worse on Monday night with the Bucks trailing by 13 points and under 4 minutes to go. Y'all know by now, you saw it. The Bucks come back. They get two late touchdowns somehow, some way, after their offense was completely dormant for the better part of the evening, which is to say the entire evening outside of the first drive. They pull it together and they get the win. They stay, and they would have stayed in the lead in the atrocious NFC South even if they had lost, but they extend their lead in the NFC South. And now they get on the road and go out west to take on the 49ers on Sunday afternoon. We're going to talk about the game Monday night. We're going to talk about that game as well. Let's set you up with everything you need here for the Free Stretch. Like always, if you want to email me, and I won't see it until after the show, of course, but go for it. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. It's BobbyGameDay. And the same thing on Twitter. You can follow me at BobbyGameDay. So here we are. And the Bucks won the game. And so everybody feels a lot better. And the prism with which we're looking through everything is completely different. And I always stress this here on this show, and I always stress this when I'm talking to my own kids. I always stress this when I'm coaching their youth sports teams. I stress it with myself, all right? Results are what matter in this world. I tell my kids that all the time. It's a results-oriented world. But to get the results you want, usually you're better off focusing on the process rather than the actual results. And that doesn't mean the results don't matter. They are all that matters. But focusing on the process will get you the best results in the long run, not necessarily on any individual day. And so, I see the Saints in a 3rd-and-17, where if they get the first down, the game's over. I see the ball lobbed over the middle, well thrown. I see Taysom Hill cradle it, and I see our season officially, if it, well, maybe not officially mathematically, but officially in our minds, imploding. And I see all the headlines and all the sports talk radio callers and all the people on Twitter and all the general unhappiness and the general restlessness of the natives that is to come. I see all those things in this split second that a football is floating through the air. And Taysom Hill catches it. All right. And then Keanu Neal, a hard hitter ever since his days at the University of Florida, comes in and separates that man from the football. And all of a sudden, I see the Bucks get the ball back after a punt and go back down and win the game. That's great that it happened, okay? But try to think about today what you would be seeing and hearing for the past few days had he not made that play. Try to think about the Saints on the goal line, up 13-3 with about 10 minutes to go in the football game. And they dump a little screen pass to the right to Kamara. But Carl Nassib, who has played his ass off, and he's been one of our best guys on the edge, gets a fingertip on it, tips the ball, it falls incomplete. Saints settle for a field goal. Now instead of 20-3, it's 16-3. And the game isn't quite over, which it would have been at 20-3. And there's a million other plays, we'll talk about a few of them, that happen in a football game. I mean, you know, ifs and buts. I know all that stuff, but my point that I'm saying to you guys is, things aren't okay. And just because the Bucks came back and won the football game on Monday night due to some very, very outstanding individual efforts and team efforts, both on the offensive and defensive sides of the ball, if you watched the whole football game, which I assume most of you did, and if you've watched all the Bucks' other games, which I assume most of you have, all right, then you know very well that just because they won that game on Monday night doesn't make everything okay. They may win the division. In fact, they're a heavy favorite to do it now with that win combined with the Falcons' loss. They still might not, though. But let's say, I mean, they are a heavy favorite to do it. And then they get a home playoff game. And you know what? One football game? Random events? Who knows? And we don't know who the opponent will be. They could still get the 3 seed. In fact, this Sunday's game would go a long way toward getting that if they could find a way to beat San Francisco. But whether it's the 4 seed in Dallas or the 3, they might win. If they do that, guess what? They're in the same exact place they were last year in the divisional round, okay? That's results. But I encourage you all to look at the process because as far as I'm concerned, And it was awesome seeing Tom Brady run the two-minute drill and the Bucs start moving the ball down the field in the hurry-up. It was awesome seeing them make plays. It was awesome seeing the defense get the ball back with a quick three and out. All those things were awesome. But I said last week after the Browns game, we can't go on like this. Our franchise can't go on like this. Well, I don't feel any different. And I don't feel any more confident in Todd Bowles. And I don't think I'm going to feel more confident in Todd Bowles. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. You know, they could win out, and all of a sudden they're the three seed, and now all of a sudden things aren't really that much different. I don't know. None of us know. And I'm not giving up on anything. But I'm not puppies and rainbows and candy and nuts and all that stuff just because the Bucs won the football game. That was an atrocious offensive display yet again on the opening drive, like they've shown a few times. They moved the ball a little bit, of course, stalled in the red zone, settled for a field goal. But hey, they moved the ball, and they got down there. And it's 3-0. And even knowing what I know about the Buccaneers this season, the 2022 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, even knowing what I know about the way they call plays, even knowing what I know about the way they attack defenses, and I use the term attack very, very loosely, even knowing all those things, I thought, hey, could be a good night for the Bucs. You know, Marshawn Lattimore's out for the Saints. They just showed they can go down the field. Maybe we'll put up, you know, maybe we'll win a game scoring more than 20 points. The Bucs have won all six of their games, okay? They're 6-6. The Bucs have won all six of those games, scoring 21 points or fewer. Which, I mean, if you grew up in the era I grew up in and you watched the Dungy era Bucs, those late 90s, like that, it's like having flashbacks. How little can we do on offense and still win? That used to be the way it was under Tony Dungy, and that feels like what it is now. The NFL record for wins in a season scoring 21 points or fewer is 8, and the Bucs with 5 games to go, if you told me they were going to win 2 or 3 of those scoring under 21 points or 21 points, yeah, I'd probably believe that. I mean, it's in play for sure. On one hand, you don't want to see that record broken because it means the offense is still struggling. On the other hand, it means they won at least 2 more games, which watching this offense, huh. So, you know. But here we go again. I mean, I'm watching the game on Monday night. I'm watching guys like Co-Keefe get targets, Leonard Fournette. Hey, look, Leonard Fournette didn't have a bad game at all. There are guys better suited to throwing a quick screen. And I'm not talking about a running back screen pass. I'm talking about a quick screen out to the flat, out to the side, and having somebody make someone miss, you know, get a little scamper guy out there and just quick throw him the ball. They do it with Godwin a lot, and they've done it with Julio a few times. Leonard Fournette's not that guy. And I'm not here to criticize individual play calling. That's not what I'm trying to do right now. It's more of the overall philosophy of the ball's going to all these different places. It's not going to Mike Evans in the intermediate area of the field. It's not going to Chris Godwin in the intermediate area of the field. The Bucs continue to do this on offense. Okay? They shun intermediate routes. And I'm not trying to say I'm an offensive whiz. I'm a guy doing a podcast in his kitchen. Okay? But the way you get yards in the NFL consistently is the chunk plays, okay? It's those 10, 15, 20-yard plays, intermediates, basically, is what I call them. And the Bucs' offense it completely ignores those. I mean, we don't even attempt them. If you look at the Bucs' offense, the entire thing is composed of, I'm not counting running, get the running plays, okay? Outside of the running plays, it's entirely composed of the quicks, I call them, which is either screen passes or quick screens, or the little slants or things where the ball's traveling vertical yardage-wise, maybe 5 yards or less down the field. There's those, and then there's the deep shots. They love the deep shots, but there's no in-between, and the in-between is where it's at. The in-between's a deep cross, a 15-yard dig. We don't do any of that, and we don't. I mean, Mike Evans, I mean, Monday night, when was the first time he even got targeted? It was well into the game, and it worked. I mean, they hit those balls. They're not like bad at it. And I know we've had this discussion on the show before about who's really the genesis, the source, if you will, of this change in philosophy. Is it Todd Bowles himself? Is it Byron Leftwich? He's been the offensive coordinator all along, even the past two seasons before this one, which were wildly successful offensively. Is it Tom Brady himself, who's older and maybe not as open to leaving himself open to the hits? Maybe he wants the ball out quicker. And I'm not going to pretend I know things I don't know. But we're going to keep getting the same results until they start running the offense that way. And I know it's not exactly the same offense, okay? There are four names in particular that make a big difference. Ali Marpet is one of those names, okay? Gronk and AB are those. Ryan Jensen, those are the four. You give me Ryan Jensen, you give me Ali Marpet, you give me Antonio Brown, and you give me Rob Gronkowski, and everything else stays the same, okay? I got a feeling things are a lot different. So in the Bucs defense, and the Bucs offense's defense, if that makes any sense, that is granted. But it doesn't mean they're just completely incapable now. And if you look at the offensive line, and I know Wirfs was out and Josh Wells didn't have a great go of it, but here's the, and Pro Football Focus grades are, some people subscribe to them, some people don't. Pro Football Focus can be hit or miss, but it's just giving you a general idea. That's why I'm quoting these numbers right now. So I'm not trying to say it's gospel or anything like that. All right, here's the five offensive linemen's grades this season. And again, I know Wirfs was out on this particular Monday night, but this Monday wasn't any different than when Wirfs has been in. All right, the center, Robert Hainsey, who has been filling in for Ryan Jensen, ranks 13th out of 38 centers in PFF grades. This is for the whole season. They're playing for the whole season. All right. So that's that upper third of the league. Pretty good. I mean, if you told me when Jensen collapsed on the field during training camp that day at one buck, hey, Hainsey's going to be in the top third of centers in the league, I would have been like, okay, we can live with that. I still would have not wanted it to happen. Of course, we want Jensen back, and then Hainsey could play guard. But whatever. The point is, he's been okay at center. More than okay. He's been above average. Okay? Our guards. There have been 86 qualifying guards. According to PFF grade, Shaq Mason ranks 19th out of 86. Pretty damn good. By the way, Alex Kappa, if you're wondering, who left in free agency, he ranks 20th, one spot behind, so they're pretty much the same. But Shaq Mason's been good. He's done a good job. They're both doing well. The other guard, Nick Leverett, who's an undrafted guy, and he's playing in his second season, but he's pretty much a rookie because he wasn't even part of what, you know, was going on last season. He ranks 37th of 86. That's middle of the pack. I mean, it's actually a little bit higher than that. Pretty, I mean, for Nick Leverett, for a guy who's undrafted, basically in his rookie season, not technically, but basically in his rookie season, and he ranks in the top half of guards. I mean, I know he's not Ali Marpet, but that ain't terrible, all right? Then our tackles, Tristan Wirfs, actually surprised he was this low, ranks 4th out of 77 qualifying tackles. 4th, all right, so obviously no problem there. And then the left tackle, Donovan Smith, you can brace yourselves for this one, and he had a rough one on Monday night, 70th. Out of 77, he has not been good. In his defense, I'll say he may still be dealing with that elbow thing. Happened early in the season, but he's maybe not himself. All right. But either way, he's out there. And Todd Bowles was asked about it this week. And he said, well, as long as he's out there, he's not going to use that excuse. And we're not going to use that excuse. And he said, it's a concern. There was an article on Joe Buck's fan about it. And yeah, hell yes, it is. It's a concern. He's killing them. I'm not scapegoating Donovan Smith. He's one guy. But it's like, you know, the offensive line's a chain, right? If you have a weak link, then even if the other four links are strong, your chain is not. So, okay. And maybe, again, I'm not trying to scapegoat one guy, but maybe Donovan Smith at left tackle on Brady's blind side, maybe that's the reason we don't want to have a play lasting longer than 0.4 seconds now to get the ball out. But you can't run an offense like that. We saw more of the same on last week against Cleveland, more of the same this Monday night. And I'm telling you now, and again, you don't have to be an expert. I'm far from it, but you don't have to be an expert to be able to see this. If they don't at least try, and if they just try and they just can't do it, and we're just not good enough as a football team, well, fine. But it doesn't feel that way. It feels like they could be trying harder to generate offense. It feels like they could be trying harder to get chunk plays. The defense is playing its ass off, and you can say what you want. You know, I'm not saying the defense is perfect. But every single week, the point totals don't lie, and they're keeping opponents to under 21 points, too. I mean, there's no way you can win a game, six games, I should say, with 21 points or fewer the way the Bucs have, without the defense doing its part. So they're not perfect, and they are not above criticism. But you'll notice this past several shows, we haven't talked about the defense much. There ain't much to talk about. They're doing their jobs. And I would have been as pissed off as the next guy if they gave up that 3rd-and-17 the other night to let the Saints ice the game. But they made a play. And even if they hadn't, all right, they had done it all night long without their two safeties. I mean, they're rolling out there with just baling wire, and they're getting it done. So, you know, results are what they are. First sweep of the Saints since 2007, 15 years. Feels good. Saints have had the Bucs number, it feels like. And like I said, there were several huge plays. The Keanu Neal hit on Taysom Hill on 3rd and 17. Carl Nassib tipping that ball. Of course, neither of those was the biggest play, really. And, you know, you think I complain about Bowles a ton. It's not just Bowles. All over the league, teams do things that do not maximize their chance of winning. I don't understand it. You know, to be an NFL coach at any part, not just a head coach, any coach, to be a coach at any level of football out beyond high school, even if you're the assistant offensive analyst for a division, you know, FCS team in college, all right, that's an extensive level of football knowledge. But I am learning more and more as I get older and as I read more people on Twitter and more information about this stuff comes out every week, that knowing a lot about football from an X's and O's standpoint doesn't mean you know a lot about football from a strategic standpoint. It really doesn't. The Saints had a 3rd and 1. This is after Mark Ingram, who was in the game playing hurt and who has since been named out for the season. And this is when the Saints were up with a chance to ice the game. They were already up 16-3, had the ball near midfield. Mark Ingram catches a pass. Looks like he has room to get to the first down marker. Doesn't do it. Curls out of bounds a yard shy of it. He apologized for that after the game. And he clearly was hurting, but still another couple of steps and he gets it. But anyway, hey, we'll take it. We caught a break. It's still 3rd and 1. The Saints run a freaking, again, a quick screen. It's 3rd and 1. Run the football forward twice and you're getting the yard. They throw an incomplete pass on this quick screen that never had a chance. And just, again, low percentage. Like, everything you do has a chance of working or not working. Nothing is guaranteed. But there's percentages, right? There's things. This one probably has a 90% chance of working or an 80%. And this one's got a little more variability. Anytime you throw the ball, and I'm all for throwing the ball, but when you throw it, especially in short yardage, you know, they may not catch it or somebody might knock it down or something. So even if the play looks like on paper it's very sound, stuff happens out there, you know? So it didn't work. Incomplete pass, 3rd and 1. That was a bad call, and that was strategically a bad idea. Not just X's and O's, but strategically. Okay, but now it's 4th and 1. Now they'll run and get the yard, and they'll put our asses on ice, and we're going to drop to 5 and 7. But no, they punt the ball on 4th and 1. And like I said, I'm going to get on Bowles about it in a minute. But as a Bucs fan sitting and watching that game Monday night, I was astounded. Now, let me tell you what. If you're ever unsure of what you should do strategically, like a decision, go for it, punt, kick, field goal, whatever, try to put yourself in the shoes of the other team and figure out what they want you to do and then do the opposite, right? So as a Bucs fan, I imagine the Bucs players and coaches themselves on the sideline, 4th and 1, Saints have a 16-3 lead. You know if they get any more points at all, or even just a few more first downs, you're probably not going to make it. And you're thinking, oh, God, we got to make this stop somehow. This is going to be tough. They've only got like 2.5 feet to go. This is not a great spot to be in. You're thinking that as the Bucs, right? And then you see the punt team run out. You're thinking, oh, my God, they're punting on 4th. This is awesome. Like, we got the stop already. We don't have to do the 4th down play. We got off the field. Like, you're elated. And I was watching, and they punt. I was like, they're punting? I was like, oh, my God, this is, you know, I still didn't think the Bucs were going to win at that point. I'm not going to say that. But I was like, wow. So they punt the ball. Again, Dennis Allen, what is he? Is he defensive head coach? Defensive head coaches, guys, I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. Stop hiring them as head coaches unless they prove or unless in the interview. If I was interviewing as an owner, if I was interviewing a head coach, even if I doubt I'd even be interviewing a defensive head coach, but if I was, that'd be like a main thing. I actually queue up tape of situations. This is what I would do if I was an owner. We'd be sitting in the nice plush office at One Buck Place because I would never own any team besides the Bucks, even if I had the money. And I'd be sitting there with a clicker and I'd bring in, you know, whoever it is, all these guys, the interview for head coaching jobs, Todd, blah, blah, blah. Okay, right here. Here's a 4th and 1. Your team is up by 13 points. There are 8 minutes to go in the game. 4th and 1 from the opposing 42. What do you do here, coach? And I'm listening real intently. I want a coach to say, well, you know, here's a chance to keep the ball in your team's hands. You want to go get this yard. You've got a better than 80% chance of converting here. That's what I want to hear. Now, oh, well, you know, we're going to put it in our defense's hands and let them make a stop, blah, blah, blah. Didn't happen. And the Saints' defense played well. I mean, defenses give way. You can't just keep putting it on your defense. You need to, as I say, let's say it with me. We're going to make it a mantra here on the Free Stretch. You must aggressively and efficiently collect points throughout the course of a football game to win football games in the NFL. That should be the overriding mindset at all times. Yes, it does change a little when you have a lead late, absolutely. But even having a lead late, that was a bridge too far. You don't punt that football. Saints did us a huge favor. But still, from the other side, watching Todd Bowles the other night, he punts on 4th and 7 at the New Orleans 40-yard line on the first play of the fourth quarter. We're down 13-3 at this point and haven't done diddly all night. And I don't necessarily, I mean, it was a bad punt call. It at least, I'm trying to defend Bowles here, because at the time it happened, I was aghast, although not surprised. And I try to calm down like I always do and you know, put more thought into it so I can give everybody the benefit of the doubt. So, punt on 4th and 7. First of all, you should never punt from the other team's 40. Let's just get that out of the way. Forget about situations. Forget about how much time on the clock. Forget about the score. All right? You are not punting from the other team's 40. You don't do that. And you don't take a delay a game to say it's the 45. I'm talking about when the fourth down comes up. All right? So it's 4th and 7 at the New Orleans 40. First play of the fourth quarter, we punt. Kamara, if anything else, should practice more getting balls to land inside the 10-yard line from like 20 yards away, because these 20-yard net punts on touchbacks when we punt from the freaking 38-yard line or whatever, and they go in the end zone. I mean, I know Bowles is doing that thinking, well, we're going to put them down at the 2-yard line or something, and it hasn't worked out. I know he's not thinking it's going to be a 20-yard net punt. I get that. But again, that happens, and that has to be factored in. So, bad punt call. Then later on in the game, it was, what was it at that point? It was 4th and 10 on our own 25. Now there's 7:06 to go, down 16-3. This is, in a way, worse because now it's way later. There's only 7 minutes left. On the other hand, it is more to go, 10 yards, and you are at your own 25. I thought that punt was slightly more forgivable. And I was like, well, you know, it almost would be dumb. You're going to punt from the other team's 40 with a whole quarter left. Now with 7 minutes left, you're going to give them the ball inside the 25. Hey, whatever. You know, they were both, I thought, times they should have gone for it. But it actually worked out. The second one worked out. I still think the first one, even in hindsight, was bad. The second one, 4th and 10 from their own 25, it worked out. Only because of the ineptitude of the Saints in many ways. But hey, it worked out. Then the Bucs go hurry up, and all of a sudden... And by the way, I know there's been a lot of talk about it already this week because the stat's been out there. I tweeted it out on my Twitter account, at Bobby Game Day. EPA per play, just running the two-minute offense, the hurry-up, the no-huddle, the Bucs offense ranks first in the NFL. And so Todd Bowles was actually asked about that too. Like, hey, is that something you want to look more at doing? Like, you know, make that something you do, you know, in the middle of a game. Why not do it in the second quarter? And they should look at, I mean, you can't do it the whole game. It doesn't work that way. But yeah, they should pick random, or maybe not, maybe random is not the right word. They should pick periodic drives throughout the course of a game when the situation dictates it and when the offense is in the right physical place, you know, depending on how tired the linemen are or whatever, or maybe when the defense they know is not in a great physical place, and that could happen in the second or third quarter of games, and just say, okay, we're going to come out this drive, just this drive, we're going to run a little hurry up, see what happens. And, you know, just something to try and get the offense going. But, again, all I'm trying to say at the end of the day, don't let this fool you into thinking everything's okay, because everything is not okay. But with that said, they are 6-6. Not only are they 6-6, the NFC South is in shambles. The Falcons lost again. Of course, the Bucs actually beat the Saints head-to-head. The Panthers are down their way at the bottom. If you look at the NFC South standings right now as we approach Week 14, okay, not only are the Bucs 6-6 and a game and a half ahead of the Falcons, and the final round of bye weeks is this week, so after this, there's 6 teams that are off this week, and that includes the Falcons and that includes the Saints. Then everybody will be on even footing. But the Bucs also have tiebreakers looking fantastic. They have a 3-1 division record. So as far as the division goes, after head-to-head, which head-to-head they have the one win over the Falcons. They'll play them again. They've got a loss to the Panthers. They'll play them again, and now they've got the head-to-head on the Saints. Although, again, none of these teams, the Falcons are the only team they should even have to worry about. And if they lose that head-to-head game coming up, they would split the regular season series. But even then, the Bucs are 3-1 in the division, and the Falcons are 1-3. So tiebreakers look good for the Bucs. And I can't imagine wild card tiebreakers are going to matter because the Bucs are going to be the NFC South champions. They're going to be out of the playoffs, I would think. But the conference record's 6-2 for the Bucs. They're 0-4 against the AFC. And if you're going to lose games, the AFC games are the ones to lose. So things look pretty good. By the way, speaking of the NFC South, now that I don't know if anybody heard, by the time you hear this show, you may have heard. I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon. But their draft pick out of Cincinnati for the Falcons, Desmond Ridder, they're finally going to call on him. No more Marcus Mariota. And so Desmond Ridder will get the start for the Falcons the next time they take the field. And I think they wanted to wait for the bye week, so they had 2 weeks to get him ready. And so they are off this week. Next week after that, he'll be out there. But that means when the Bucs play the Falcons, unless there's an injury and Mariota comes back in, the six NFC South games the Bucs have played, they will have faced six different quarterbacks. All three divisional opponents will have started a different quarterback in the two games against the Bucs. It was Jameis for the Saints the first game. They had Dalton the other night. P.J. Walker started for Carolina when they played the Bucs up in Charlotte. And now Sam Darnold's the starter again. That could change when they play again. But as of now, that's the plan. And like I said, Mariota out, Ridder in for the Falcons. So, you know, I want to be positive and things like that. I was a little bit negative last week. And by a little bit, I meant it was probably the most depressing I've ever sounded. I had people tell me, like, not just, I had a couple listeners email me. And then I had a couple of my family that listen and friends say, hey, man, because I'm always Mr. Positive. Like, if you don't know me, going back to when I was a kid, I was always like, we can get this done. We can get this done. This is going to happen. You know, and that's just a product of growing up and watching the Bucks be 4-12 all the time. You know, so if they show any sign of anything, I feel like it can happen. But they're like, man, last week, I've never heard you so down on the Bucks before after that Cleveland game. And I was like, yeah, I'm really down because I don't feel like we can go. I don't feel like we can get to where we want to get with Todd Bowles. And here's the thing. You know, like I told you at the top of the show, they may do that still for this season. And a lot of it would just be random geographical stuff. Like, hey, we happen to be in the NFC South. So, you know, 8-9 or 9-8 gets it done. And I don't know what the Bucs' final record will be, but they're 6-6, so with five games left. And we'd all love for them to go 4-1 and go 10-7. And if that happens, maybe I would have been wrong. And I'll always tell you this, okay? First and foremost, I am a Bucs fan. It is my favorite football team and really my favorite sports franchise. It's the only sports franchise that has been part of my life literally since the beginning, and even since before, since my mom, pregnant with me in the winter of 79 and early 80, trudged up the stairs of the old Sombrero to watch the Bucs clinch the playoff berth in the rain with Neil O'Donoghue kicking the field goal against the Chiefs, going to the Eagles game, the first ever playoff game, going to the Rams 9-0. I was there as a blastocyst in utero, okay? Only team I can say that about, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I can tell you this, I will never be anything but a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan as long as I'm alive, all right? So I'm a fan first, and what I'm telling you is this. I will always rather be wrong and have the Bucs do well than be right and have something be bad. I don't care. This isn't about ego. Todd Bowles could go on. They could go 4-1, finish 10-7, win the wild card game, win the divisional round. They could name Todd Bowles coach of the year, and I sound like the world's biggest a-hole, and I'm fine with that if it means the Bucs did well, because that's what I really care about. And I know that if you're listening to this show, that's probably what you care about too, so I don't mind being wrong. I hope I am. But I don't think we can get to where we want to be as a franchise with Todd Bowles as our head coach. Never mind what we're seeing, you know, what we know is on the horizon here with the Bucs and salary cap hell. There aren't really a lot of guys on this team who are in their prime. Certainly the most important contributors to this current version of the Bucs are not in their prime. And obviously the big one we haven't talked about, or not recently, of course it's talked about all the time, but Tom Brady. We don't know what's happening next season. He could retire again, he could stay in the league, but not with the Bucs, or he could be back with the Bucs. There's just no way to tell yet. And maybe he knows and he isn't saying, or maybe he doesn't even know yet. The point is, there's a lot of things on the horizon that do not lead you to believe that, you know, we're going to be right back in the thick of things right away. It might take a little bit of a rebuild here. So that's all the more reason, though, why I was getting so distraught about how it's been going this season so far, because in a lot of ways it feels like, hey, man, like, you know, we got to cash this in. They already did cash it in, okay? They won the Super Bowl. So even if everything goes to hell even more, it will not matter. Mission has been accomplished for this, you know, run of the Tampa Bay Bucks. But the point is, you got, you know, probably one more really good shot at it this season for now. And you want to cash that in. And it hasn't felt like they've been maximizing their potential to do that. And watching this offense on Monday night, despite the win, didn't make me feel any better. Although it was, hey, look, it's always awesome to see the, you know, Tom Brady do his thing like that. And that was something that he's only done one other time in his career for all the things he's done. In the regular season, he's never come back from 13 points down in a fourth quarter to win. The only other time he did it was the Super Bowl against the Falcons. So if you were at the game in person, especially you, and you saw that, you witnessed that, you know? And, you know, with Brady, it was cool to see how excited he was. Like, at the end of that game, like, as a fan, I wouldn't even feel excited. I was just relieved, like, oh, God, you know, we didn't lose. Okay, you know, that's how I felt. But he did look like a kid. He was so excited. Like, you can tell why he's still playing at age 45, and it's because he gets off on that. Like, that's what he, you know, that's not the only thing, but I'm saying, like, he was like a kid out there. He was so excited that they came back and won that game. Like, that's what he's, and we haven't had a lot of that this year, you know, that old feeling. And you could tell that's still what drives him. And it was cool to see that. Like, he was really, really, just on a very basic human level, just excited to win the football game. All the other circumstances be damned. And that was really cool, the way it unfolded there at the end. And it was cool for all of us. I mean, listen, you know, it's better to win than to lose. It's better to have a chance than not have a chance. Even if you are down on your team's chances, even if you don't think they'll do what they need to do with that chance, we have a chance now. And, you know, the South is really in the Bucks' control. And it's a good thing that, you know, that game was a big win on more than just the level of, hey, it's a win instead of a loss. If you look at the upcoming schedule, and we're going to talk in a minute here about the 49ers game, but, you know, these two games coming up at San Francisco and at Cincinnati are both going to be very challenging in different ways. And if they lose to San Francisco, and I know they were starting Brock Purdy, a rookie, seventh round. He was Mr. Irrelevant, in fact, last pick in the draft. They're starting him. Obviously, the Bengals look like they're coming on now. If the Bucs had lost that game to go 5-7, we could be staring 5-9 straight in the face. Now, as it is, I mean, 6-8 is still not good. But they had to have that win, and they close with the Cardinals, Panthers, and Falcons. If they could get one of these next two, whether it's this weekend or whether it's Cincinnati, and they're 7-7, you know, obviously we have to adjust our expectations here. 7-7 in this division this season puts you in the driver's seat. So let's look at this game out in San Francisco on Sunday afternoon. 4:25 kickoff on Fox. It's the 49ers, a 3.5-point favorite as of right now. The over-under is 37.5. It's the second lowest over-under this week besides Steelers-Ravens. And why not? You've got a team with an offense like the Bucs, which it doesn't matter which defense they're playing against, does not score a lot of points. And then you've got the 49ers, who have allowed the fewest yards and fewest points per game in the National Football League. They are first against the run. And on top of all of that, they are starting, in his first ever start, the final pick in the draft this past year, Mr. Irrelevant Brock Purdy out of Iowa State. And he came in, didn't start, but came in when Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt last week. Did pretty well against the Dolphins. They won the game. He was 25 for 37, 210 yards and a couple touchdowns. Also had an interception. And it is his first career start, like I said. So across history, or I don't even know exactly. I read this stat. It didn't say when they're going back to. But in general in the NFL, quarterbacks making their first start, regardless of the win-loss record of the teams or who's favored or who's not, quarterbacks making their first start win 38% of the time. Now, the last 10 years, since 2005, this goes back. I shouldn't say last 10 years. Last 10 times, a seventh rounder has made their first start. They're 2-8 in those games. And yet, we know the Bucs have had some issues with backup quarterbacks. You know, over the years, they've had some games where we all thought we'd have an easy one. Oh, man, their guy's hurt. We're getting this no-name backup, and the Bucks lose the game. Against rookies, it's a little bit different. They've done pretty okay in that spot. Todd Bowles, both as defensive coordinator and head coach. Not a terrible record. We'll see what Purdy can do. Of course, I think this game is going to come down more to what the Bucks can or can't do offensively against that 49ers defense. But a low-scoring affair is predicted. And so let's say the Bucks are able to win. I think it's very, very likely that they would contribute to that stat that I mentioned before of having all six of their wins come scoring 21 points or less. That's very much in play again. But winning, it's going to be very difficult against a very solid 49ers team that has a very good defense. It does help to be going up against a quarterback like Purdy. And I'm not saying he's no good, but I'm saying, obviously, seventh round guy, final pick in the draft, all those types of things. It's better than facing Jimmy Garoppolo. Although the 49ers offense is still fairly capable. We'll see what they're able to come up with. As far as injuries, this is the other thing. It's not looking great for the safeties, Antoine Winfield and Mike Edwards. And I'm, again, recording this on Thursday. They were both out at practice, but they were on their own on a side field working with trainers, not part of the regular practice. Of course, Winfield with the ankle and then Edwards with the hamstring. That suggests they're probably not in great shape to play Sunday. They haven't been listed as out or anything like that. Tristan Wirfs wasn't even there at practice, and of course we don't expect him back for a few weeks. As far as the others, Cam Brate, who was out with an illness, he was normal go. Sean Murphy Bunting was normal go. Vita Vea gets listed every week for something, and then we go, oh man, I didn't know he had a thing like that. Now it's a shoulder. And then you go to the practice, and Rick Stroud or Greg Allman, all the Bucks writers, Joe Bucks fans out there, and there's Vita Vea practicing normally. So he's listed, but he should be okay. It really looks like the two main ones besides Wirfs are the safeties, Winfield and Edwards. Also, the Bucks made a small move this week. You probably already heard Jalen Darden was cut, and so he was actually doing a lot better punt returning this year. He was seventh in the league in punt returns. Obviously, didn't have much of an impact at receiver, and the Bucks and Todd Bowles just said, they were going to try something different, and he wasn't having an impact beyond just the punt returns. And as far as being seventh in punt returns, hey, you want as much as you can get, but the role of punt returner, it seems like it's diminished a lot the past few years. And I don't have actual numbers here. I need to pull some numbers and give you concrete stuff. But punt coverage, these special teams coaches and the athletes now, I mean, I don't know what it is, the punters themselves and the hang time, but they've got it down to a science. I mean, how often do you see a punt return? Well, first of all, you don't see that many punt returns, period. There's a ton of fair catches. The gunners are right there when the ball's coming down. But even when you do, I mean, how often do you see a punt return for more than 5-6 yards? Like, the guy usually catches the ball and he's swallowed up immediately. You don't see guys breaking them. You don't see punt returns for touchdowns almost ever anymore. Those used to be pretty common. And I don't think it's because punt returners aren't as good. I think it's because punt coverage has been, again, distilled into this real scientific thing that teams are able to get it pretty much to the where you're just punting it up in the air, running down there, fair catch or quick tackle, and that's it. Devin Tompkins, who has been on the practice squad, has been spotted doing punt returns in practice. They have spot for him. Maybe it's not been done yet. As of now, maybe he gets called up to the active roster for this one. But either way, that'll be on Sunday at 4:25 p.m. Fox. And it's a chance, it'd really be a big win. I mean, with Cincinnati coming in, that's going to be a fun game at Raymond James Stadium. I know a lot of the Ohio people are probably looking forward to it and all that. That's next week at 4:25, but it's a tough one. Both of these two are tough ones. And if you could get a split in these next two, and I never say that. When you're a team, especially that you think you're a Super Bowl team, you're like, well, let's go 2-0. You don't, we'll take a split. In the Bucks' case, these next two, I wouldn't necessarily take a split beforehand. I'd try and see if they could win both games. I'd gamble a little bit. But after the fact, if they do end up splitting, I don't think I'm going to be too angry about it, unless they lose one of the games because they punted from the 32-yard line or something and didn't even try to score points. Something very possible that could happen, given what we know has happened so far. But I hope the Bucks just, bite the bullet and get a little more aggressive. I know it's easy for me to say. It's easy for me to sit here and say it. I don't have Bosa coming down my neck, and Donovan Smith over there, but you got to give some routes time to develop. You got to hit some intermediates. You've got to go for chunk plays, and you got to try and keep moving the football down the field and aggressively and efficiently accumulating points, especially with the run defense you're going to face against San Francisco that's not going to make it easy to make a lot of hay down and underneath there. So, you know, we'll see what they end up trying. If you are looking for a car, truck, or van, by the way, whether it's brand new or pre-owned, check out BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, how they spell Curry. BillCurryFord.com. You can see everything there. They've been serving the Tampa Bay area for over 60 years now. The physical location is a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. Huge lot, beautiful showroom. They got snacks in there. They got coffee in there. Go check all that out, but start out at home. Go to the website. Go to BillCurryFord.com. You can see everything, and you'll get the completely transparent online, you know, no haggle pricing, so you know going in what you're working with, and then you can make a deal either in person or if they want to, you want to have them bring it to you, they'll bring it to you. They'll still do that. It's a holdover from COVID, but they will bring the car to your house just to test drive if you want to check it out, let alone if you're ready to make a purchase. So you don't have to leave your house, but if you do want to go over there and see Sean Sullivan, the GM, good friend of mine, no matter what you do or what you buy, you get the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, which means the engine trouble is covered throughout the life of the vehicle, as long as you own it and you bought it at Bill Curry Ford. So check them out, BillCurryFord.com. Thank you for listening today, okay? Let's get set up for a big weekend. I love the 4 o'clock kickoff, or 4:25 is what it is actually, but that's my favorite kickoff. I mean, we love the primetime games, of course, but I like letting the day kind of marinate, watching those 1 o'clock games, and then the Buck game comes after that. Especially this time of year, it's just nice. It'll be nice next week when it's a home game, too. So have a great weekend. Get everything done leading up to 4:25 on Sunday. Bucks at 49ers. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform, the single best place anywhere for Bucks coverage, right here at JoeBucksFan.com. And it's an honor to be able to be part of it. Thanks to Bill Curry Ford, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'll be back next week. Email me or catch me on Twitter if you want, at Bobby Game Day. And hopefully we're talking about a winning 7-6 football team next time we are here on the Free Stretch. But that's the Week 14 Free Stretch, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks!